We are on the air. This is the beginning of our third voting budget meeting. Just to remind folks of the process, we've scheduled one more voting meeting before we start revisits, but if we don't have enough motions for that meeting next Tuesday the 14th, we will go straight into revisits. I anticipate there are still more motions that have not been forwarded to Norma, so continue to do that. The process typically is we go through a round of motions initially, and we allow for readjustments based on the package that is at the point, and we call that revisits. And that will start on the 15th if we have a full day of motions on the 14th. Actions can happen in this meeting with a majority of those present in the room. If everyone leaves, there's only three left, then two people can make decisions. So stay around. We have on your desks a schedule for today. We have an action summary from our last voting meeting and a packet of information with seven different items in it, most of which are relating to tonight's issues or issues that we've asked questions about in the past. If we are ready to proceed, I'll start the meeting since Nathan will be here in about 15 minutes. We'll start with workforce development and one stop. If you want to turn in your OTR pages to 58 and 59, I believe there's a motion forthcoming.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Thank you.
People are at the page. Kathy Lucerera.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. There's an OTR 42. It looks like, see if I got this right. With 42, I'm trying to figure out what the requested OTR was. $11,285. The county administrator's budget. Oh, there's Dooley. I'm just asking a question. The county administrator's budget didn't recommend that. Is that right? Okay. Thank you.
All zeros. Dooley?
Well, OTR 42 is to keep the Workforce Investment Board functioning here, and my recollection is that although on page 57 of the OTR book the total is listed as $71,264, there was a $7,000 adjustment to it subsequent to the printing of this page so that the OTR would be for $64,264.
Correct.
And that's what I'd like to move.
You'd like to move that from zero to what?
Well, I'd like to do it as a target.
As a target. Is there a second? Martha Robertson seconds. Is there discussion? Frank Proto.
This is a hard one to get your hands around a little bit because there's a little bit of emotion involved in it, too. The concern that I have is the fact that as the funders begin to pull out, like the state and the feds, once again the county's asked to step in and make up for the funding. I hate to put Julia on the spot, but can we hear something about the number of positions that have been created? And I mean, Mike sent us all an email over the weekend or on Friday that showed how important this was with TCAD's initiative and their help. And I don't think there's anybody that disputes that, particularly since I may be the only surviving board member here that served on both PICs when they were original. I still have the coffee mug. But I think it's important to hear how effective this has been with placement, putting aside the new initiative at TC3 that you're going into, Julia, with the tourism board. that's a separate, that's a completely separate one. But I think I think it'd be important for the public to know the justification of this, since this is being moved as a target and it's multi-year funding. Once we buy in, we're in.
Briefly, Julia, I know we have justification in our books. Frank's looking for a summary for the public's purposes.
Okay. As I mentioned last time I was in front of this group, workforce development boards are increasingly becoming important planning boards in terms of workforce development. They're crucial to the ongoing success of businesses in our community. Increasingly, businesses are finding that they cannot get the workforce that they need and that the individuals are not trained. In terms of the Workforce Investment Board itself, Diane can speak to the one-stop center and placement related to the one-stop center. It's a vital planning board, private sector-led, as you know. We have some very important businesses that are involved in our board, and they're involved because they have issues with workforce development. And these are businesses that are growing, that are growing, and in order to grow, they need the workforce in order to grow.
Just a quick follow-up, Frank.
Julia, what's the probability that the funding stream that used to that has been funding this is going to come back and start funding it again?
I will tell you that, interestingly enough, the higher the unemployment rate goes and the worse the economic times, generally, workforce development profits from that. As the economy gets worse and worse, generally, I will say, in the past, our funding has increased. At this point, there has not been any move at the federal level. As a matter of fact, at one point, in the second bailout package that that they talked about months ago, the second bailout package there was a movement to put more money into the Workforce Investment Act at that point. It did not get approval. There's still discussion at this point at the federal level. So as I look at what the possibilities are, I have some hopes that may change moving forward. But generally, there's a lag in what occurs nationally in terms of unemployment and when the money actually is increased. And so I have hopes that that will happen. I can't say for sure, particularly when you look at the federal level and the big issues that they have increasingly.
Thank you, Julia. Any other questions? Pam.
Well, I guess I would just like to speak in favor of this. I'm going to support it because I think it's just incredibly important that we maintain these two functions at this time. I really don't feel as if we have a choice. It's just a matter of necessity, but I also think that these people do a wonderful job, and it has a lot of support in the community, so I will be supporting this.
Martha Robertson.
We did get an email from Michael Stamm, and I can't seem to find it, so I wonder if Michael could come to the microphone. I know Heather Filiberto had talked to me after a meeting a week or two ago and said, you know, this is becoming increasingly important to TCAD's retention, especially retention efforts, and that they really kind of wouldn't know what they do without Julie in her office. I know as chair of the IDA, a number of times we have seen applications where a business didn't really, in particular, what we see is a lack of attention or history with diversity recruitment, and it's great to have Julia be able to step in and work with those businesses, and we've gotten terrific feedback with that specific niche. So I would be happy to hear from you, Michael.
Well, I won't promise to repeat anything I said in the email. Hopefully I won't disagree with it. Just a few examples. As you said, at the IDA and with other TCAD projects, we're trying to encourage diversity with hiring practices with local employers, and most local employers want to do that, but they have no clue how to do it. And we're looking to the Workforce Investment Board as the local entity that can help businesses do that, and they are currently working with some of our customers with diversity plans, which is great. TCAD doesn't have the capacity to do that, but the Workforce Investment Board does. Also, one of the things that we spend most of our time doing is meeting with existing businesses to find out what opportunities they have, what challenges they face, and by far the most important one is workforce. They need to be able to find trainable entry-level people. They need to retrain employees. A great example is the WIBS Machinist Training Program, which isn't using any money to train people. The local private sector employers are putting money into that. What the WIB did was got a group of private sector employers together and helped design a program. So those are two examples of the kinds of things that WIB does. No one else does well, and as Frank suggested, regional efforts, which might be an alternative to having our local WIB, have never worked in the past, and I can't imagine they would ever work in the future. We're just that different from the other counties in the region and their workforce investment boards.
This is OTR 62,264 target. The county administration has been clear that this is a policy question, that they don't want to keep postponing year by year to have a one-time funding. So this is time for deliberation. Kathy Lou Herrera and then Carol Chalk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to say I'm glad to hear you all talking about this. One of the things that gave me pause was seeing the purported effect. I've heard lengthy, passionate, and emotional discussions on the WIB board about the way that going to another WIB is basically impossible. We've done it before and it didn't work. They don't want us and we don't want them. So I had to read this effect with a grain of salt. In fact, I completely agree with the statements that y'all have made about the increased support for training working people in not just entry-level jobs, but also good jobs, sustainable jobs, the way that businesses have definitely risen to the occasion in terms of recognizing the demographic changes in this country and the need for diversity. And I think it's a priority that we definitely need to take on this year, and making it target is something that I will do, not because of a threat to put it in another WIB, because I don't think that's a realistic one that actually the business community or local people would stand for or consider. As has been said many times, it was tried before, it didn't work, and we don't want it.
Carol.
Yeah, I have two questions. One, will you talk to the extent to which the program serves? Your answers have indicated that the program is serving local businesses and companies. Talk about the extent to which it's serving the companies versus the workforce individuals. You know, individuals in the workforce is one question. And the on that score, I think we're going to see more and more of a need for this, and that this is a year to carry it over, because we're going to, you know, it'll be an interesting year to see what's done on the federal level and the state level in terms of workforce training. The other question is about tourism. And I just want to be assured, before I vote for this, I see that you're not going to exclude. I realize that tourism development is not the focus of what you're doing, but I do see it as an important component of our economy, and one that is growing, the one that might continue to grow. And I just, and one for which there might be some piece of money, you know, that we've talked about, workforce training for those needs. And so I just want to know if you see that as a part of what you do, and just something that you'll continue to look for ways to integrate into what you do in the future.
The answer to your first question is that the board itself doesn't work directly with job seekers, and I'm trying to respond to the questions directly related to the board. I do some work directly with businesses, and then we also have staff at the center who also do work with businesses. Diane and the One Stop Center do most of the work with job seekers. I do a lot of planning around how best to serve job seekers, convening agencies,
when there are grant opportunities, to plan around industries that we've targeted as industries where there are good jobs with benefits available to individuals. So we would be advising those groups and saying, these are some areas there's a real need. This is an area where they have the potential to make X amount per hour with benefits. And so my role with job seekers is more along the lines of convening groups to apply for funding when funding is identified. And then the Workforce Investment Board, in addition to planning, also has responsibility for over $700,000 a year in funding that's to provide direct services. And we award those services contracts out to community agencies as well as to the Office of Employment and Training. And that funding is to serve job seekers. It's just that they are the one-stop center, the community agencies are serving them directly. And that's as we identify needs for businesses. In response to your question about tourism, we do have the Strategic Tourism Planning Board has approved between $45,000 and $50,000 in funding. I believe that will go through this group at some point as part of the Strategic Tourism Planning Board budget. Approximately $45,000 to $50,000 to do work in the hospitality and tourism sector, and that is to look at what the career ladders are for individuals in hospitality and tourism, and also to look at moving individuals from looking at what the skill sets are for people in hospitality and tourism and moving them up the career ladder, as well as lateral moves for individuals in that industry. So we are definitely working in that industry. And a portion of the Workforce Investment Board budget will be, if it goes through the Strategic Tourism Planning Board, there's about $8,000 to $9,000 in that proposal that's directly for the board activities in tourism, hospitality, and tourism.
We'll move on to the one stop and the next vote, but let's proceed to a vote on this item. Frank Proto.
Julia, I hate to continue to put you on the spot, but in the white pages, in the large section, I'm looking at the part where your funding stream that's reported in there, and it looks like the federal aid, adult, youth, are the ones that are taking the biggest hit, along with, well, those seem to be the ones that are taking the biggest hit.
Page 269, if you have it in front of you.
Thank you, Mike. Do the members of the Workforce Board make a contribution, a financial contribution as well? The members of that board.
It is not a membership organization. The members of the board, lots of contributions to workforce development in terms of what they do with their businesses and agencies that bring money to the table to do different things related to workforce development. As you know, the board is made up of both private sector businesses and agencies, but is not a member organization. And let me also say, at different times there's been questions about charging fees for services.
Right.
Generally, those fees for services would be for services through the One Stop Center and wouldn't be directly for board planning. It would be more services that were directly provided by the One Stop Center. And
thanks. You anticipate
that is something that we've looked into.
You anticipated my second question. But what at the appropriate time, I'd like to move to amend this, to move it back to one-time funding. So I'll be guided by your...
Well, if you're not saying it now, I will move on to Mike Hattery and call on you if you want to make that amendment. Mike Hattery.
Actually, I'll defer to Frank to make that amendment unless there's somebody
sure.
coming after me.
Nothing else on the floor, Frank. If you want to make the amendment, now's the time.
I'd like to move to make this one-time funding for 2009.
Seconded by Mike Hattery. It's now amended to one-time. Is there discussion? Dooley?
Well, Frank, I'm glad you asked earlier whether there's a chance that federal money will be flowing this way again. And you seem seem to feel the answer is very likely yes by moving to make this one time.
What I'm saying is I don't think anybody really knows, and that's what I think I heard Julia say, that nobody is sure, but in this climate with the market is, the last I checked, was down 700. I don't know, Dave, is it changed?
Actually, Julie has the floor, Frank. Well, she's speculating what your reasons are for moving one time.
Sorry, Mike.
I thought before I moved this whether it made sense to do it for 1 year, for 2 or 3 years, but it's been one time funded too often, and I think we want to keep it, and if money comes in from the feds, we could always reduce a target and be happy about that, but I feel much less sanguine about it, so I am not finding your amendment friendly, that's all.
Further discussion on the amendment. Mike Hattery.
For me, you know, I support both this program and the next one on an ongoing basis. But in this year, with the current situation we're at with our target growth in the levy, I would want to go with one time until somebody can start getting us somewhere else lower on other expenditure items. I support both of these, but I support this on a one-time basis for this budget calendar.
Okay, so if we vote, there's 12 people in the room. We need 7 to pass. This can come back as a revisit. Jim Dennis.
Thank you, Mike. Would somebody just tell me what dollar amount we're talking about? Is it OTR 42?
42. The number is 64264. It's 7,000 less than what's in your book. Prepared to vote on OTR 62464. 64,264. One time is the amendment. All in favor. One-time funding. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So that fails 6-6. We're back to the main motion. Main motion is to make it target. Is there further discussion? Ready to vote? Martha?
Yeah, we have budgets all the time where federal money or state revenue, whatever comes in, then that offsets our target. I think that's the appropriate thing to do, and I think we should just make a commitment to this effort.
I'm going to call a vote. Take 7 to pass. The motion is OTR 42 target funding. All in favor, raise your hands and keep them up. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. That's 10. And opposed? 1, 2. That passes 10-2. Are there further motions for workforce development? If not, we can move on to one-stop center, employment and training. Anyone want to make a motion regarding one-stop employment and training, which is the next OTR in your books, and starting at page 273 in your big books? OTR 43. Martha Robertson.
I move 11285, still the right number?
Yes.
To target.
Is there a second? Pam McAsey, is there discussion? Some of it we've already traveled down this road earlier. Mike Hattery.
For the same reason that I discussed under Webb, I would move to make this one time.
One time. Is there a second? Frank Proto. Discussion about OTR 43 being one time. Ready to vote? All in favor of making OTR 43, which is workforce development one stop, 11,285 one time. Please raise your hands. And opposed. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. That fails 4-8. We're back to the main motion, which is to make it target. Further discussion? Ready to vote. All in favor of making this target? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And opposed? That passes 11-1. Any more motions on workforce development or employment and training one-stop center? Thank you very much. Thank you, Mike. Thank you, Julia. Thank you, Diane. Thank you, Jean, for joining us.
Thank you.
Let me move on. There are two motions in a row here, and actually later on, Dooley had a motion that relates to this regarding how will we handle the rent for soil and water. If you want to turn to pages 53 in your OTR pages. Oh, I'm sorry. I jumped over Greg's. Excuse me. This one is not one of our OTRs. Greg, did you want to move something regarding public access defibrillators?
Yeah, sure. In your packet of materials handed out today is OTR number 93, proposal to add $72,000 to contingent fund pending an implementation plan for a public access defibrillation program. And I so move.
That's moved by Greg. Is there a second? Kathy Lou Cerrera seconds. So it's on. It's a yellow or canary or whatever you want to call it page, the second page of your packet.
It's just the yellow page is just a basic explanation of the likely number of units that would be needed and where they would go. And the bottom part is just the budget proposal. It gives you a rough idea of the where that $72,000 would be divided up.
So the ongoing maintenance of this looks like it's $700 a year. Is that accurate?
Actually, the ongoing maintenance would probably be closer to the last four combined.
Okay.
Because
so that's about $2,100.
By and large, those are disposable items in the last four columns.
Okay.
Not completely, but
four rows.
I'm sorry.
Four rows.
The last four rows. Yeah, I'm sorry. Not the last four columns. The 700, 200, 400, and 800. Generally single-use items.
Proposal to put $72,000 in contingency pending a plan next year. Jim Dennis, then Martha, then Dooley.
Greg, is there a training component to this after you buy them for 1 year? Is there ongoing training that you have to do?
I suspect the Red Cross does it too. I'm familiar with the American Heart Association, but the American Heart Association offers basically CPR classes with an AED component as a standard course. So the answer to your question is yes.
And since the chair is gone, is there a dollar amount that goes with that? Would there be? Do we have to?
That bottom line, that 800, the American Heart Association costs are minimal for training. And I could point out a lot of employees are already trained for activities they do elsewhere. For example, Michelle Potter up there is already trained, so if we had the machine, she could be on it in a second.
I had Martha, then Julie, then I see Mike Sigler.
So, according to this, it actually should be just under 70,000 one time, let's say 2,000 target, and that gets added to whatever target. Emergency response?
I think the motion is all of it to go to contingency.
I'm trying to understand what, to be an accurate reflection of what comes out, what we'd have to do the following year to make this program make sense.
That's probably correct.
Okay, and then the training, so you got training for the actual fees for classes is $800, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
What about, I assume that would be release time for staff? They would be taking time off of their other duties, right?
Well, that would be required, yeah. I mean, if they're going to be in training during work hours, they won't be at work, so I think that would be handled on a location or department by department basis. The department heads obviously have control over when their employees are at work and are at training. That's managed individually by department, I would imagine.
So you don't know whether there's would actually be a cost that we pick up for overtime or anything like that?
I don't. It depends on the department. I would suspect bigger departments would have more interest, smaller departments less interest. So. There's a fair number of departments that do this anyway. I suspect Health Department, Department of Emergency Response, perhaps Highway, Sean could,
Sheriff,
and Sheriff are all agencies that do this training already anyway.
And how much time is each training session, or how long does it take to be trained?
I am no longer a certified AHA instructor, but when I did it, the class was at the longest 6 hours, sometimes less if it was a refresher class.
Thank you.
Have duly named.
So you have no interest in starting this year? This would all be next year?
I have interest in starting it tomorrow, but assuming that we don't have money till next year, that'll work.
Well, I wondered if you were contemplating trying to move on it this year.
I guess yes would probably be the correct answer, but the proposal as it stands is for next year.
I understand that. Okay, thank you.
All right. Next we have Mike Sigler, and then Will, and then Carol.
I just have two questions. First, did we look into any grant funding for this? This seems like something that's like built for grants.
Yep. Jackie Kipola, at the outset of this process, actually applied for some grants, and unfortunately we did not receive them.
Okay. How much more effective are these than CPR, which everybody should know anyway, but doesn't?
I can't give you the scientific answer, but early access to defibrillation is critical in the success of the survival of people who suffer sudden cardiac arrest. So it's significant, but I don't know. Not being a physician or familiar with the numbers, I couldn't tell you. I couldn't quantify it for you.
Cool.
Will and then Carol.
Greg, I know that they're in the schools already, and I presume some other places in the community. Do you know any sense of how many there are, or is this literally the second batch of them that will be?
Oh no, they're all over the place. Well, there's several religious institutions here that have them. Yeah. The schools have them. The airlines that do business here carry them on their aircraft. Our sheriff's cars all have one in them.
So time is, of course, of the essence in terms of response, and I assume this is just making it quicker. Is that the essential thing? Failing this, you'd have to wait for a sheriff's car or something?
Correct. It's making it quicker, and it's also making it available to the public so that basically someone who... A layperson essentially has access to a defibrillator and can act quickly.
A trained layperson.
Correct.
Carol?
Yes, on the surface, this sounds like something that's worth us exploring, whether it's worth having. I'm curious, as with other things that have come to us first in the budget that I haven't heard discussion of before, I'm just curious as to what the... whether there's been process on this in the past and whether this is something that would usually come to us through either the public safety or the health committee, and whether have those committees turned it down, or what's been the process, and what do you see as the process if we approve this?
It's gone to the public safety committee, but the public safety committee wasn't asked to act on it. I can't speak to the process of this as opposed to anything else, really. Perhaps somebody else could.
Mike?
I think that around halfway through the year to three-quarters of the year, something comes to committee and it needs budget action. Often we'll say, wait till the budget process. So people are often caught in a catch-22 unless it's a compelling reason to fund it right then. So... it may well have been meritorious, but people decide, let's wait until the entire 2009 budget is looked at in balance.
Frank?
Thanks, Nathan. Greg, boy, your voice has changed, Mike. So, Greg, can you describe, if we park this money in contingency for 2009, what do you expect to happen in 2009?
I would expect that with the help of the assistant coordinator for EMS in the Department of Emergency Response, that would be Beth Harrington, that we would essentially carry out or begin the process of purchasing and installing these devices in the locations that you see here, is the simple answer.
I mean, did public safety actually review, I mean, there doesn't seem to be a need for a plan of any sort, because it's simply an installation and the training that goes with it. So are you assuming that, or should we anticipate a plan of any sort? It doesn't seem likely.
Not really. The plan would be to place accessible AEDs in the places listed on the AED placement portion of this document, and hopefully we wouldn't need to use them.
Okay, I got one more follow-up.
Go ahead, Frank.
Are these, in your estimation, are these easily removable once they're installed? Because part two, we're talking about putting six of them in Bigsby, and in the back of my head, I seem to recall this board voting on buying a building up by the airport for... Does that ring a bell? I don't know. Maybe I'm having a delusion here. Can these be pulled out of one building and put in another?
If they got installed in Bigsby, keep in mind that this document goes back quite a ways. This project started last year. As I mentioned earlier, Jackie Kipola searched for some grant funding. So this is the list for AED placement is dated and probably was put together before we bought some property somewhere on Brown Road.
So, but I mean, the installation could take place at location B instead of location A, right?
That's correct.
Okay.
Mike Hattery and then Kathy Lucera.
What department would be responsible for maintenance, and who would be responsible for making sure we have trained personnel at the locations where we have them?
The first question's easy. That would be the Department of Emergency Response. The second question, I suppose, it would be a bit up to the departments or the locations where the devices were at, but with oversight from the Department of Emergency Response and the EMS coordinator, Beth Harrington.
All right. Kathy Lucerera, and then, I'm sorry, did I have somebody else? That's it. All right, go ahead, Kathy.
Thank you. I'll tell you why I'm going to support this. Anybody can have cardiac arrest. An electrician that gets unintentionally exposed to too much electricity, any individual, the right charge will give you cardiac arrest. Also, look at our changing demographics. We've got an aging population. Other organizations have seen fit to do this. How much is a life worth anyway?
Okay. All right, are we ready to vote? Martha?
So emergency response wouldn't install them, or would they? Would that be facilities?
Facilities would install the cabinets in this proposal. The cabinets would have a dialer on them that would automatically dial the 911 center when the cabinet was opened and the device was removed, so for automatic notification purposes. So that's where an electrician's skills would be required. But once the cabinets were properly installed, the devices themselves would probably be installed either by the sales representative or by the representative at the Department of Emergency Response.
Carol?
So these numbers include the installation?
Yes.
Okay. What about Beth's time to oversee the maintenance and schedule training and that sort of stuff?
What about it?
How much time does it make that with her?
I don't think it would take that much time. This is part of what she does already. She's procured AEDs on behalf of rescue squads, fire companies, ambulances in the county already. She handles not only acquiring them, but servicing them, keeping them up to date, training. Part of her job is coordinating the training of emergency responders in this very field throughout the county. So this really is just an addition, a small addition, I would add, to her job duties already. She has told us that she doesn't envision this being any problem at all. So I think after the initial startup, I think it's just going to be part of her regular duties.
All right, Carol, and then we're going to vote.
Yeah, I just wasn't sure all my questions got answered about what the process would be after we pass this. If we put this in contingency fund, does it come back to us as a resolution before we spend the money?
Yes.
Right. And I just feel more comfortable knowing directly from our staff that they're okay with taking this on to their duties.
Okay. All right. So the motion is to set aside $72,000 of contingency for the defibrillator program. And so all those in favor, please raise your hands. 1, 2, 3. All right. That looks unanimous. Opposed? All right. So that passes unanimously. All right. Okay. Moving on now to soil and water. Mike, you have a resolution. Go to your OTR page 20 it's OTR 20 and the page is 53. I always get that mixed up there. Mike, go ahead.
Yes, on page 53, OTR 20, that includes cost of living index for the staff, but it also includes the entire department, essentially increment about 3%, the $4,500. We're presently in the middle of negotiations regarding rent, and it's still open-ended. But if we're successful, I believe rent will actually decrease for 2009. So I will move to decrease that target from 4,500 to 1,500, decrease by 3,000.
All right. Do I have a second? All right. Will has seconded that. All right. So, Mike, do you want to elaborate?
I would ask either Steve or Craig to summarize where we are at in negotiations. Is that a valid number, or should we do a different action? Because I know the next motion is a different way of handling it.
Yeah. Craig, I'm not aware that you are paying lease amounts at this point, are you?
At the moment, we pay a little under $2,500 a year out of our own budget towards the rent. Which we certainly would be more than willing to continue. There's just one thing I want to say, too, is Greg and Frank are aware of this. The state put some extra funding into for soil and waters. It's called performance measure funding. It's up to $14,000 a year, and one of those performance measures that we have to meet is saying that our base budget has been increased at least by something each year. Because the theory was they didn't want to see counties deducting that money because they wanted that to be more money to get more projects done.
I have Pam and then Frank.
I guess this reduction in the cost of living adjustment for the staff, my memory is that we have given these cost of living adjustments to other organizations, and I'm not sure why we are choosing this organization to say we aren't going to do it. I mean, if there is a general move not to give anybody a pay increase, I mean, that's one thing. I'm not sure I would even support that, but this, I don't understand the rationale here.
Okay. Frank?
Do you want to try to answer that, Mike, before I ask my question?
I'll answer it after your question.
Pam, I'm glad you raised that, because at a couple of budget meetings back, I asked a similar question with regard to the number of maintenance of effort requests we have been getting, because I don't remember this board agreeing as a board to cover maintenance of effort requests from any agency on an ongoing basis. In the last couple of years, we seem to be getting those frequently. And I'm glad you asked it just the way you did, because this seems to be singling out this agency to get whacked. However, the description that was given to us a few minutes ago ties this in somehow to the potential for a rent increase if we move to the facility that Steve is interested in having to move to. To the best of my knowledge, and Greg, you and I sit on that board, I'm not aware of any staff reductions in that move that would warrant a reduction in a cost of living increase. Help me out.
No, I mean, you're right.
Okay, so they're two totally separate issues, and I think you're on the right track there.
The only reason I pegged it to this OTR, it's the only OTR for this department. Well, there is a maintenance of effort one. I guess I could decrease their base budget. It's not being recommended at this point. But either way, I'm trying to capture the savings from a different negotiation in the rent agreement, anticipating that. And if that's not accurate, I'm glad to withdraw it.
Yeah, I think that's correct. It's not accurate.
All right. Then I'll withdraw it.
Okay. All right. So that's been withdrawn. Frank, you have a motion also for soil and water.
Yes.
This is OTR 19.
OTR 19.
Same page.
Give me a second. It's on page 53. I'd like to move the $18,000 into contingency, anticipating a, well, I'll move it in, my motion is to move it into contingency. The county administrator's recommendation was to zero it out, and then I'll describe it. This is the one that directly relates to the rent.
Okay.
Is that
seconded
target or one time?
He says move it into contingency.
Target or one time?
Well, I'd like to move it in. My heart says do it on a target, but I think we ought to do it on a one-time until we see what the state is going to do.
All right. That's seconded by Dooley.
Okay.
All right. And Frank, go ahead.
Just a quick description. We have been working with the feds for over a year trying to get them to come to the table to decide what they want to do about the rent at community corners. Soil and Water has not had to pay a major share of that rent, and this was the first year on a three-year estimate that NRCS has asked that they kick in, and the numbers are quite high, and they escalate over the 3 years. Steve, to his credit, has found that the space where we're going to be housing the voting machines up on Hanshaw Road has adequate space to house Soil and Water and also to house the feds. We had a meeting with two representatives from, they were out of Syracuse, seems like 100 years ago, but it was about 2 months back, and they promised us that we'd have an answer within 30 days, and to the best of my knowledge, we're still waiting for that answer, about whether they wanted to move in with us or not. The savings to them was significant. And we still, now I wasn't able to attend today's meeting, so I don't know if there was any discussion about any further movement from them, but I think the answer is no. We haven't heard anything at all from the feds.
No, we haven't heard anything more.
Assuming that Soil and Water can move into the building on Hanshaw Road and we can reach a conclusion on these negotiations, I simply wanted to set the money aside so that Greg has a place to go, and I think our first responsibility is the Soil and Water, and if we can keep them together as two agencies, that would be nice because they're companion agencies, and we do work well with them. But I don't think at this point we have an obligation to worry about the feds. I think we need to worry about the agency that represents the county.
Abdulli and then Steve.
Frank, I wish you had stayed with your gut feeling. I second it one time, but it's clearly going to have to be target of some amount from now into the future, as far as I can tell.
And we don't know what that'll be.
We don't know what that amount is, and it will wind up in REL's budget under the rent line. Just before this meeting started, I was informally consulting with Steve, and he said, maybe this should wait a week. Maybe he'll have some information about COFA, too. If you look down on your schedule after the break, three down, I was going to address Soil and Water also. So I'm considering that moved up into this discussion now. I think we should be prepared to recognize officially in the 2009 budget rent for soil and water and either capital or rent for COFA. Neither number is known now, and it might make more sense to do those at our next voting meeting.
Do you want to move it as a one-time?
Well, I want to get more information and then decide how to move it. So I would, although I seconded your motion, I would be happy to delay this for till our next meeting. It's a suggestion.
Actually, that's okay with me. If there's a possibility we're going to get some more information. I just don't want to lose it.
Is that what you were going to talk about, Steve?
Yeah, I just we're in negotiations right now. I have been in contact with Senator Schumer's office, and they have promised that they are going to be taking action. And there are other negotiations that are going on. I think it's not appropriate for the legislature to take action at this point. Just give another week, and I'll have a better feel for where we are. Certainly before this budget process is over, these questions have to be answered. But to take action right now could interfere with negotiations. I'd prefer if you delayed it for a little bit.
It's not part of the bailout, is it, Steve?
All right, Norma, can we get that in the next budget?
Okay, then why don't we withdraw it for today's meeting? Is that okay?
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Martha?
Just for information, Steve, if you were successful in moving it to Hanshaw Road, what would the cost be? You don't want to.
It's in negotiations. Don't say anything.
All right.
I didn't ask.
Okay.
The answer will sound strange until you see the whole picture.
Thank you.
Okay. We're still doing this. Norma, we have a budget update. Is that right? Or do you want to save that for later?
Well, we've been kind of flying through and I handed out a packet. Everybody should have gotten a packet that included that the OTR information. It also includes item number 2 is an exemption requirement report that we now have to file with our budget. It's posted on the web. I don't know if everybody realizes we have a new website for the budget and all the documents are out there. So if you're looking for anything, it is there. There's a memorandum that's responding to a couple of legislative requests.
Well, hang on.
Ooh, wait a minute.
Spend a little bit more time on that exemption reporting requirement.
Sure.
In the past, they have not required this and have not required a full reporting of pilot agreements. As you know, pilot agreements being negotiated for AES, and that AESQ is a power plant on Cuba Lake, and that's a fairly sizable property. This is something that's been done across the state, and I think what's happening at this point is the state is starting to step in and say, well, wait a minute, we really have to keep better track of these, and we expected that would happen, so that's what's going on here.
Okay. Any questions for Steve on that, or Norma? Martha?
So this list that's attached, these are particular crop. Can somebody explain the list?
This is just by class.
Kelly, why?
I'll just take something. What's something that we need to pick up?
Historical Society.
Yeah, Historical Society. Where's that?
Bottom one.
Okay. So it's just a group. So the real property tax law 444, there are 3 exemptions. The total is $901,000.
So there are 3 organizations that fit into that bucket, that category.
Right. And then at the end, you'll end up having another report with the IDA facilities.
Okay. Mm. Question?
Yes,
Steve, if we wanted to get a breakdown as to what comprises the number of exemptions, we just go over to assessment and they could break that up?
Yeah, this is just a summary report. There's a detailed report that goes with this, too.
Any other questions on this?
Are all churches on one line in that?
Religious organizations.
It's just the one kind.
Pam?
Well, I guess I'm not going to ask specific questions. Who would I ask I mean, I don't mean to do it, take up time now. I need Aurora.
Specific information on here? The assessment department.
Assessment. Thank you.
Okay, Carol?
To put this in context, do we have available now, or I'll go get it, the total taxable value, what do I want? I want either the total amount that this is then coming out of to figure out what percentage this is, or the total taxable. So the total assessed value or the total taxable
base. The next page is the total taxable value. It's on that memo.
It's the red text.
In the red text, right. The legislature recommended that. This was to answer a question that Martha had about why there was a change in the general revenue summary between the county administrator's recommended taxable value and the current, the legislature recommended taxable value. That's the total, so the 6.2. Do you see where I'm talking? It's red text on item number 3. Oh, right on the front.
And that is the total
taxable value
that this gets subtracted from?
That would then get added to give you a total value.
So it would be a...
Right. This is less exemptions because that's what we're taxing on what's not the taxable value. Less exemptions. Number 4 is the information that came from Soil and Water, which you've already talked about. That's some additional information.
Before we leave that one, Tompkins is not on this list. So our county appropriation for Soil and Water would be probably lower than any of these. Is that right?
Let's see if we can go.
The base...
Our contribution is $135,500 at the requested level.
Frank?
But our base in 2008, which is what this is a list of, was $108,500.
$108,500, yes.
So we are lower than any of these.
Yes.
Go ahead, Frank.
I'm looking at the upper right-hand corner of any one of those summary pages. It says total assessed value, $10,191,000,000, et cetera. And then the 3.9 or approximately $4 billion of exemptions, the equalized value. And the last column says 39% of the 10 is 4, approximately. Just county, just those receiving county tax exemptions?
Right.
So village, school district... Any other, we've often heard the city, for instance, say about 60% of their properties receiving some sort of an exemption. And sometimes we hear Valeria say that we're hitting about 50% of county properties receiving some sort of an exemption.
I think it's about 40 in the county and about two-thirds in the city.
If we wanted to get a breakdown, does the red sheet tell you what the exemptions are by municipality?
No. Tells you what the taxable value is by municipality.
Could we get a breakdown of it by municipality as to what the exemptions are? Okay, thank you. And that's a Valeria question, right?
It's the same report. It would just be broken down by town. That's all.
Martha?
Thank you, Norma. This is really interesting information. So I think you just said something about the check. I got it right. So the red sheet, the red numbers are the total taxable value. The summary at the bottom of the landscape one of almost $4 billion is exempt. So if we were to say the value, the total taxable value, the total assessed value in the county is a little more than $10 billion.
Right.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right, Pam.
I just wanted to. I got some state figures on the relation. In New York State, Tompkins County is the second highest county in tax exempt properties. And it's their figures were it was a about just a little bit under 50%.
Yeah.
And that, I mean, I don't know, maybe it's changed since.
It's a couple
since,
years old.
Yeah, it might be. But the cities was the top in the state, and it was under just a little under 70%. But that may have changed too.
Who was the county that had the most?
St. Lawrence County.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Makes sense. Yeah. Okay. Anything else on that, on this memo? Or anything else in this packet?
There's a lot on the back, too, this, about the median value of a home. That's, appreciate that. So I continue to say the 2% of the increase is new lumber. 17% of the increase in assessment is due to the market rate and equalization rate. In other words, our change to right. annual assessment.
Right. Okay.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Anything else in this memo? Norma, do you have anything else?
You're welcome. I just wanted just to continue. Mike Plinkler asked a question about a breakdown for the cost of the communications maintenance. And the pink sheet is a response to him from Lee Shurtleff. You can, there's a lot of information. I don't expect to go over it now, but just so you know, that is his response to explain why the cost, or what's comprised of the cost of maintenance, or in the cost of maintenance. Just want to quickly go over, remind everybody that we have $1.2 million of fund balance right now to work with. Well, as of the time I printed this, I'm not sure where we are right now. We were at 2.92%. That's the general revenue summary, item number 6. That's the most up-to-date general revenue summary as of the last meeting. And then Steve wanted to make sure all of you had a copy of the preliminary analysis from the state for the budget development.
So this last packet came in this week, and I think it's a pretty good summary, and it gives you a pretty good idea. It's a fairly quick read. It gives you a pretty good idea how they're estimating where the shortfalls are going to be and why they're occurring. And if you put together the current facts with the way they're outlining things, you get a pretty quick feeling of, okay, I am starting to understand what's going on in the New York State budget, and then I think you'll relate to what I've been telling you, that hold your breath, wait until all the information comes in, wait until after the elections, and you'll see, if you read this, you'll understand the timing of that a little bit better, too. What this document does is explains the increase of $1.2 billion of shortfall that they're trying to wrestle with. But I guarantee you, by the time they get to Albany to wrestle with it, it's going to be bigger than that. So look it over. You'll get a much better feel for how the state looks at things. I would anticipate that you're looking at a large increase over and above what they're talking about here.
Mike? The way I translate this to our present budget deliberations is, as Norma mentioned a minute ago, we're at $1.2 million in fund balance above our target. We just raided that piggy bank a little bit, and there's some motions later today that are going to raid that piggy bank a little bit. But I would say we should definitely not go below $1 million in extra fund balance going into 2009, given these scenarios and worsening. And that's, you know, a rough number, obviously, but I think that's a target that I would want to stick with.
Norma?
And just so everybody kind of recalls what we talked about the very first meeting, we're using $1.3 million to reduce the tax levy right now. We don't know, depending on what we're spending this year, how it's going to impact next year. We want to keep that in your mind, that we are spending $1.3 million of fund balance and reducing the tax levy. We're also deferring our payment for the health department building out a year. We're only paying the interest, so that's also going to come to the tax levy next year. and the Highway Department, and I don't mean to keep, this is just really important that everybody, that we keep reminding ourselves that this is happening. The Highway Department, we don't know what kind of impact the equipment, the increase in materials and equipment rental are going to have on the 2009 budget. So all of these things you might want to keep in mind as we go forward.
Okay. All right. Is that all, Norma?
I think that's,
he said, that's enough, isn't it?
Yeah.
I could probably come up with some more if you want.
And, go ahead, Julie.
I'm thinking about what Mike Aplink-Allaire just said, that, and what Norma said, we're using $1.3 million to keep the tax levy increase down. If instead we only spent $1 million for that and allowed ourselves to spend the 0.3 on other things that seem important to our residents, that would still enable Mike Kaplink-Allaire's desire not to let the unallocated funds, the $1 million, still be there. So there's another way to get a little more to spend without spending that down.
Okay, Pam and then Jim.
Yeah. I guess that I was wondering whether we've had any revision in the, from David, in terms of sales tax revenues.
That was my question.
We've had any revision on that.
Well, I'm expecting, right now, the sales tax, after 7 months, is up 9% for the year in the current budget. And we will know in around the 25th of the month what the second quarter total is. Now, we're up for this quarter 2 months in a row, but the final settlement month could certainly eliminate all that. It's interesting if you read that the Wire story about sales tax. A lot of upstate counties are seeing this what might be considered extraordinary increase in sales tax so far this year, and without where is it coming from, because no one's pointing out that there's been an abundance of retail activity. The question becomes, if we have a good third quarter, and the odds are that it will be okay because 2 out of 3 months are in for the quarter. But if it should suddenly shift dramatically and neutralize the growth in the first, we might have to look at the estimate for the year, and which compounds into our growth next year of 3%. Is that too optimistic? Right now, we're on track where it really won't be actual growth. The sales tax has risen so much that what's in the budget next year could be exactly the same amount of money that we expect to get in 2008.
Pam, you have a follow-up?
I do. When you say the sales tax revenues are up 9%, is that up 9% above what we budgeted, or is that the total percentage that has increased?
It's up 9% over what we got last year. The year-to-date budget, it's up about 5%.
Okay. I have Jim, Lesland, Frank, and then Will.
Thank you, Nathan. It seems that we're talking about revenues, and I read with interest the next to last paragraph from Lee to Michael that says, for a variety of reasons, revenues have not developed, but I remain confident they will be successful in doing so in the long term. And those revenues were SWEN, the colleges, tower locators, et cetera. And does anyone in the room want to talk about SWEN for a moment, or any of these other things?
Well, Lee and I have been working on the revenue side of this project for quite a while. The Statewide Wireless Network is in a position where they have spent quite a bit of federal money, and they have an obligation to do something. They're also separately funded within the state budget, so they're not coming out of general revenues. So there are funds available. SWEN has to make up their mind whether they're going to do a large project, big statewide project, or whether they're going to stitch together smaller projects. It seems most likely at this point that they're going to stitch together smaller projects. Because of the success of our project and the reach that we have in communications, it might be a very big success for SWEN to simply expand our system. So Lee's in discussions with SWEN right now, trying to talk to them as to whether or not that makes sense to them. So it's possible that we're going to come out of this quite well. No one can predict which direction they're going to head at this point, but there's just no way that we're going to end up not having some sort of benefit from the SWEN project. They simply can't cover this part of the state without using our system. So we know, we're very confident that something's going to happen with them. In addition, we've had our initial discussions with Cornell and with the colleges, trying to determine exactly what our relationship is going to be moving forward. They have agreed that, yes, they do want to participate as a partner in the communication system, and we're working on negotiating how that relationship is going to work. So there's something in the works there. The co-locators, we have, I think, six right now. I'm anticipating that we'll have at least 10. They average roughly $2,500 per month. They range from $1,500 to $3,000. That's a substantial amount of money, too. The overall idea here is that among the partners, and when we start to expand outside of the emergency responders, then we're talking about TCAD, the schools, and so on, all of the partners, the highway departments, and so on, all of the partners chipping in together, the idea is that it will be a kind of an enterprise system in that it will support itself on ongoing maintenance, and the taxpayers will never have to replace the system again with taxpayer money. So that's what Lee's building. I think he's going to be very successful. It looks pretty good. It's just taking a hell of a lot longer than we thought as far as building the partnerships.
Thank you.
All right. I have Leslyn, Frank, Will, Martha, and Mike Hattery.
I just want to follow up with David Pam's line of questions. I see here, or maybe it's a normal question. We have our 2007 adopted. I'm looking at the summary pages. Is it possible to get an actual for 2007, especially around our sales tax? Do you have an actual? What came in?
Let's
see. I can get it another time. I don't need to get it next.
That's 7 months. You talk about the annualized?
Yes.
Just a minute.
Somebody else can ask your question.
What the actual was?
What year were you asking?
I'm asking for 2007.
Okay.
Because we're not done with all ages yet. The next question can go while David looks.
Okay. All right, Frank.
Yeah, I want to go back to what David said also. One of the reasons that I think we're, if you can call it enjoying a 9% increase in sales tax revenue, sadly, is because the major generator is not retail, it's utilities. That is the major generator of sales tax revenue for our county. And everybody that's paying an oil bill, a gas bill, an electric bill, a propane bill is kicking in to that increase. So the taxpayer is getting hit twice, or at least twice. The other item is whatever we're collecting on gasoline purchases, and some of us on diesel purchases. So it isn't due to an increase in retail sales. It's due to an increase in utilities, and it probably is going to get. We will enjoy more sales tax as we get into the winter. Sadly,
Will.
Frank just answered my question. It was counterintuitive that we'd be increasing given the larger economic climate.
Martha.
Steve, you said you right now have six co-locators, $1,500 to $3,000 a month. Did you say those are highway and towns? Or?
No. Those are cell phone.
The commercial.
Yeah.
And you expect you'll get about 10
correct.
Of those? Okay, so that adds up to in the neighborhood of $25,000 a year
per site.
Oh, that's per month. Got it. Okay, okay. Oh, that's better.
Yes.
Okay. Now, would others like TCAT and schools, would they be paying something also?
Yes, but how that's all going to work out, we're not really sure. At least trying to work out a per-radio approach, but we haven't gotten that far. Cornell's a big player here, and how they decide to play is important.
Mike Attery.
Now the next group that you mentioned is highway departments. Did I hear you right that you were projecting them as contributors to the system in terms of in some kind of fees?
Well, that's all going to get negotiated, Mike. Don't get excited.
No, I mean, I'm asking, do you expect that?
From my perspective...
Think about a village that has a police department. I have one in mind that has a police department that's going to use this system. And then...
The police department's already covered.
Yeah, I know. But in emergencies, et cetera, those public works people are often brought in on events, et cetera. Are we saying we're thinking about fees for those?
Well right now they have a radio system that they maintain. Okay. It seems reasonable that they would pay something to participate in the communication system. They certainly would have to buy the radios.
Yeah. I mean, equipment's one thing. If we're talking about ongoing fees to maintain the system, that's another thing.
There's 20.
Well, we'd...
7, 8.
I'll let Lee work out all the nuances of this, but the non-emergency responders are going to be expected to pay something. I'm not sure how much that would be, but the overall idea is that you would build an enterprise that would support itself. In other words, it's not the county's responsibility to subsidize the town highway department's communications system.
All right, I can see how this
It's been a discussion since the system starts.
All right. David, you have an update, and Carol will be the last question after that.
We received, for county purposes, a figure of $27,800,000 in 2007. Now, that's the county used for county purposes.
County purposes.
Carol?
I understand that we're trying to build something that's going to eventually, that currently has and eventually will have more partners that will share in the cost. But if we overstate it, we might be unrealistic. And you lost me when you said that he's trying to create a system that will never cost. But you say it was very strong. It will never cost the public anything to maintain again, something like that.
I want
a more realistic assessment of, what proportion the public will be involved in. And eventually, I assume this system will need, maintenance and rebuilding. What's the life term, the term of years that the system will operate in?
The idea is that right now we spent $16 million on an entire communication system. If this supporting structure enterprise is built correctly, you should have enough coming in so that the system does not have to be totally rebuilt again, ever. That's the idea.
Ever.
Yeah.
All right. Great. Looks like a good time to move on now to the rest of our agenda. We're a little bit off schedule, but we're not too far. We have Mike Hattery. You have a discussion about DSS positions. Can you talk about what you had in mind? Mike, you're up.
Oh, yeah.
That was a long time.
We discussed this. I basically ask that we get a review of the, I think there's a plus of 10 new positions in social services. And I just ask that we get a sense of what those are. I understood that we've already approved most of them. But given that that's the total change, I believe, in our positions countywide, I thought it would be worthwhile to have a review of that.
Okay.
Go ahead, Patricia.
This year we added positions. Basically, we did it very strategically. We had three three areas of concern in the department, and actually the state had the same concerns, so the fund became available through Office of Children and Family Services and Office of Temporary Disability Assistance. We added two senior caseworker positions in Child Protective Services. The state is very concerned and has come out with a caseload study saying that Child Protective Service workers shouldn't have a caseload of more than 15 cases per worker. So the state made CPS enhancement funds available so that all counties could maintain a level of 15 cases per worker. Our caseloads have gone up in Child Protective Services. We've been running about 100 hotlines a month. So in order to deal with that, we had to add two senior caseworkers. We added a grade A supervisor who is responsible for maintaining oversight over the foster care and Child Protective Services, and we added a grade B supervisor, again, to assess the work as you add more staff and as the caseloads go up, being able to monitor the progress notes on a daily basis. Progress notes have to be typed in within a day of the occurrence, and they are frozen and locked in and can't be changed 3 days after they're put into the system. So supervisors have to be able to review those cases. Right now we have about 140 open Child Protective Services cases. So those are four positions in Child Protective Services. In Medicaid, we added two senior social welfare examiners. One of those is a senior social welfare examiner running the dental case management program for prenatal and children under 3 years old that's funded through a grant from the health department. And we added a supervisor in the resource recovery division. The state has asked counties to be more focused on fraud and recovering resources from people's estates and property liens that we have. In addition, we added a paralegal in that division to assist us in filing the liens, filing estates, checking the paperwork that's coming in. If somebody has a trust, we need to ensure that they're not trying to evade the Medicaid regulations. Those positions were all covered by Medicaid. There was no local share. And then we added a substance abuse evaluator. That funding is coming from a grant through the Department of Probation. That person is going to the jail and doing substance abuse evaluations. Half the time is spent in the jail doing substance abuse evaluations, and the other half of the time is doing back-to-work assessments for employability for our clients. We added another social welfare examiner in our employment division. The state is, I think, Health and Human Services has heard about the participation rate issue. The state, all states have a federal mandate to meet a certain participation rate. The number of people on who are receiving temporary assistance, I think it's 45% of those people must be engaged in work-like activity or be employed in some manner. And no county in the state has been able to make that 35%, so the state made available funds so that we could hire people, a person, to go into do more hands-on casework at people's homes to try to see what the barriers to employment are. And we added a social welfare examiner in our records department. Our department, starting next month, will be going in the direction that most every other county in the state has gone. I think we're one of the last ones. We're scanning all of our documents. We will no longer have paper files. So within probably, I think, 8 months, we have a contract with the state. We'll be taking all of our files, scanning them, and sending them to the state, and we need a person who can run that project for us. So those are the positions that we've added this year.
All right, Frank?
Patricia, two questions. Can you say approximately, with all the addition of all these positions, how much the salary line has increased? What does it represent in total salary? Let me ask you the other one. The last position you mentioned about scanning documents, is that something that one of the project assistants can do instead of a full-time employee?
Actually, there's two parts of it. We need a social welfare examiner level person to manage the and have an understanding of the paperwork that has to be scanned and how it has to be scanned. It's a very complicated process. We are hoping to be able to have a project assistant because for this project also, because part of what has to happen is all the papers have to be sorted and all the paper clips have to be taken out, all the staples have to be taken out, all the paper has to be properly processed before we send it off-site. So it could be that at the end of next year, at the end of this process, if it goes smoothly, we could transform that social welfare examiner position to a lower level position. At the beginning of the process, we really need somebody who understands what the regulatory obligations about what paper have to be filed in the files.
Okay.
I don't have that number. I can tell you that all of these positions, the computers, anything that is attached to these positions are all funded by funds from the state. So there are no county local shares. But I can't tell you what the overall increase is. But there, none of these positions, we were very careful that not to increase our staffing with any positions that would cost the county money.
Are the individuals aware that if the state continues with its largesse and the way that Steve was describing it, that we may anticipate another cut, that these positions may all be zeroed out?
I would say that it would be my decision. If you told me that we needed to cut positions, to go in and take a look at where we needed to do that. I wouldn't say that all of these positions would be cut. I would say that I have to look at what our department needs, what are our priorities, and what are our mandates. And I think every staff person at the Department of Social Services knows that the county's committed to try to keep the staffing levels the way they are, but that next year we are facing some serious issues, and it may come to be that we have to make decisions about staffing.
I know there's other departments doing that now.
Yes. So.
Mike Hattery, Leslin, and then Pam.
The kind of funding for these positions, is it, are any of these what I would call project funding that's, you know, not considered, let's push off the table the fact that the state's going to be having cuts.
Right.
We know that's going to happen, but at the time these positions were funded, were these considered basic program funds of some sort, or are they considered one-time or special project funds that are going to end?
I would say the only one that falls in that category would be the employment, the social welfare examiner. That funding hadn't been available in the past, and depending upon where we are, where the state is with the participation rate, and whether or not the state thinks we're going to pass the federal audit, they might decide that they, because what they're looking at is if the state doesn't pass the federal audit, the state is going to get hit with a huge federal sanction. It's going to cost the state millions of dollars. And so they're saying if we give the money to counties now, that's going to possibly have an effect on our ability to pass the audit. But that said, maybe next year when the participation rate audit comes through, they might decide that they're going to move the money elsewhere. The rest of these, the Medicaid is definitely solid. That's any time we add any Medicaid positions, unless, of course, next year the governor does something with a Medicaid, that doesn't cost the county. There's no local share there. And the CPS enhancement, I don't see that changing. They have a published report indicating that those caseloads must be at 15, and I don't see them backing off of that.
Leslyn and then Pam, we need to wrap up this discussion.
Patricia, let me make sure I understand you right. These are 10 new bodies that are coming onto your staff, not that they were some positions right. that weren't filled in your funding. These are 10 new bodies.
10? Well, ultimately, there are 10 new human beings in the department.
Okay. Thank you.
Pam?
Non-human beings?
Not dead bodies.
Well, I don't want to take up time now, but Patricia, if at some point I could check your list against mine, I only come up with 9. And so, I must have missed one somewhere. And so if I could, if you could just email me just sort of a list of them.
Maybe I just missed one. I'll email it to you.
It's 201 and 2 in the big book.
I'll email you the list.
Okay.
Okay. Was that, Mike, did that meet your needs?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Patricia. Mm-hmm. Okay. Moving on now to cut funding for project assistance at the Department of Social Services. So actually, no, you should probably stay. Frank, you have a motion?
Yes, I'd like to get your attention. I'd like to propose cutting this one-time funding for these positions.
I'm sorry, that's OTR 23 on page 43. I believe it's like 65,000. Okay.
Actually, if you'd like, we can discuss it before I make a motion.
Okay.
No.
All right. So, Frank, you made a motion, though, right?
Yeah, but I'd still like to get an explanation out of Patricia.
All right.
Was it seconded?
No. I haven't asked for a second. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All right, Mike, second. Go ahead, Frank.
Okay, Patricia, the explanation is pretty explicit about transitioning people into permanent county, to permanent county employment status. Can you say something about how successful we've been so far? I mean, I may end up withdrawing this, but I just simply want to get an update on.
Okay.
How successful this has been?
Well, this year we've had 9 project assistants assigned at the Department of Social Services because someone might start and work for 3 months and then another person, so it's not 3 people all the time all year long. We've had people working in our records department, at our front reception. We've had people working as case aide. We've had a person working as a long-term care specialist, account clerk typist, and someone assigned to the AAFCU to do volunteer income tax assistance program. Of those 9, we've had 3 people become permanent county employees. We have another 2 people who have successfully taken the civil service exam and are hoping to be reachable the next time there's a vacancy. 3 of those 3 people were students who came and worked during the summer.
Were the 3 permanent folks and the were the 3 permanent folks offered positions right in your department?
2 of them were, and 1 of them is in another department.
And how about the 2 that successfully took the exam? Do you think that they'll be in your department or someplace else within the county?
I don't know. I mean, I don't. I'm not sure if I'm going to have any openings. I mean, although you see that I've added 10 people, but I've been very careful recently.
That's where I was going.
Yeah, I'm being very careful about filling positions right now because I'm a little nervous. So certainly if someone leaves and it's a key position, I've really got to fill it. So the two people are on lists that could be in our department, but also they're generic lists that could be in other departments too.
Well, you mentioned, if I could, Nathan said yes. The you mentioned one of them helping in long-term care.
Mm-hmm.
Is that some help that's being given to Lisa's area in COFA? Yes?
Yes. Yes. Actually, I take that back. So that's three. Actually, three people have become employed because I didn't count that person. Yes.
You said three.
Did I?
You said three permanent and two are waiting because they successfully took the exam.
Okay. But I didn't. The exam, that's right.
Okay. That answers my question. Thank you. I still want to make an appointment with you.
Yes, I'm sorry. I'll talk to you about that.
Okay. Sir, you withdraw.
Well, does anyone else have any other questions? Because I'll withdraw it at this point if they're...
Withdrawn. All right, thank you.
All right.
And we have one-time funding for vehicles. Martha?
Yep, it's the next page. Is that right? Yeah, that's right. Priority four, so it's page 44 in your yellow sheets. And I asked Patricia to bring us some information about these vehicles, that the vehicles that would be replaced, because if I would like to move some or all of it as one time, if it's if it makes sense.
Okay.
So if we were to do that, what would the total be? Would it be 38,000 or would it be 23,140?
I don't know.
It looks like it would be 23,940.
Yeah, 23,940. Okay. So, Martha, are you moving that?
Yeah, let me do that. I'll move 23,940 as one time.
Okay. All right. Do I have a second? Jim seconds? Okay. Discussion?
Okay. So, here are the descriptions of our cars. We have a 2000, I don't know how you say it. I don't know cars. So, it's like a 2000 Chevy Geo Prism with 26,627 miles. Am I saying this right?
Right.
It gets 26.1 miles per gallon. We have a 2003 Chevy Impala with 90,936 miles. And that gets 23 miles a gallon. We have a 2003 Chevy Impala that has 84,268,000 miles, and it gets 25.9 miles per gallon. Those are our cars.
Dump them.
All right. I have Will, and then Jim.
We could do better. Are these cars, those are large cars you're describing, are they typically driven by...
Oh, Will, please use your mic, by the way.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. How many people are typically riding in those cars?
The cars are used to transport children and parents to and from visits, sometimes there's one person, but at any given time there could be transporting a family, transporting adults.
So you would need five or six capacity?
At least.
Yeah.
And the capacity for three child seats. Two and three in the back, maybe. Yeah.
And if you were to get the money to do replacement, are there vehicles that would fit the bill? Have you some sense what you could get on the
Well,
state contract?
I think we would look into what we could find. I mean, it's like Tom and I would take a look at what's out there, what's as efficient as, and what's rated as high as, in terms of efficiency, and how long something's going to last. And that's generally how we have done things in the past. So that's how we do it.
Jim, and then Mike Sigler, and then Dewey.
Do you have to buy off state contracts?
No.
No, you don't. Well, I know a little something about cars, and all those numbers she gave for mileage are on the very best day that car ever functioned. So two of them, the Impalas, no way they're going to make 25 miles a gallon. The Geo Prism, incidentally, was not a good car when it was brand new. So, truly, three new cars or however many you're getting will be a huge savings to the county just by replacing those.
Mike Sigler.
I was just thinking, besides the gas issue, they're just old.
Yeah. Well, we put them. I mean, it's not like we didn't say we needed them. We do need them. Yeah, you're right. They're old.
I mean, you have 90,000 miles on the car. Are they part of our county replacement car program? Do we have a program?
Each department manages their cars themselves. Some people have proposed that maybe we should be looking at a fleet management system, and we're looking at some alternatives. But it is, there is no uniform policy.
Dooley and
well,
Martha.
I was wondering about this soon-to-be-developed fleet policy. I don't know where it stands, and whether every year you usually replace three cars, is that?
Yes, that's our.
So how many do you have then?
15.
Yeah, 15. And one of them's a van.
Because I'm hopeful that since yours is one of the larger collections of vehicles, that were there to be proposed a countywide policy, you would be able to participate, and purchasing separately now would not undercut that policy. But it doesn't sound like it would if that's your replacement schedule.
And several of the larger departments have been talking about what would the concept of a fleet of county cars, you know, what would the barriers be? So we've been having some discussions about the pros and cons and trying to move in that kind of, at least exploring what it would mean to see if it would be a cost saver.
I'm sorry. All right. I have...
It's emissions, too, not just money.
Yes.
I have Martha and then Carol.
I also thought about the Ithaca car share. When Steve knows, I've been talking about this for a couple of years. And there, Steve's been talking to Fernando de Aragon. Transportation Council is also very involved in the car share. And they're kind of not ready to do this yet. And the first site would probably be the courthouse complex. So that's what you wrote. Okay, so that... That could, and the idea there is that county cars would be used, would have a contract, whatever. County cars would be used for county purposes Monday to Friday, 8 to 6, or whatever the time is, and available for Ithaca car share evenings and weekends. So, and other cities have done this, and it's a way of sharing expenses. One concern is that it's not clear if the car share has enough members to make sense yet. So, good idea for a couple of years from now, I hope. In the meantime, Dooley mentioned emissions. I was at a meeting recently where the new county comprehensive plan element on greenhouse and gas emissions was presented to this community group, and the goal that we're going to be asked to buy into, everybody here, is a goal of 2% reduction in emissions every year from now to 2050. That's a pretty big chunk. If we take it a little at a time, it's not impossible. It could be a real opportunity in many ways for good things to happen in the county. But I'm really starting to see this kind of decision as really something we have to do. As Gay Nicholson talks about getting cash for clunkers, there's just, you know, you've a very big way to reduce your overall emissions is to take cars out of the system that that are less efficient and replace them with better cars. So I think this is, there's a long explanation, but I think this is a really important thing to do. In a lot of departments, we do fund one-time car replacement people with one-time money. So that's why I really wanted to look at this again.
There's no guarantee that those cars will be off the road, though.
Right. That's understood, but the best we can do.
All right. I have Carol, Will, and Mike Sigler. For something that's incredibly not controversial, I don't understand why we need to talk about it so long. Norma, and Norma also has a comment too. But let's start with Carol. Carol, actually, let's go Carol, Norma, and then Will, and then Mike Sigler.
I was just going to say that in spite of the fact that I drive my own cars into the ground and 2003 doesn't sound so old to me, I think that in an ongoing public area like this, you have to have cars that are more dependable and that it's reasonable out of 15 vehicles to think of replacing those that become about 5 years old and under 100,000 miles when you can still get something for the car that you're getting rid of. It does strike me, though, so that seems reasonable. It does strike me, though, that right now in the market, we're seeing a shift in terms of the cars that are going to be coming out a year from now versus those that are available right now. I mean, I think because we've had a rude awakening with gas prices, I don't know why we've had a recent history of big gas-guzzling cars being more available, but that's what's out there flooding the market, and the price for cars that are more fuel-efficient right now happens to be very high. So, I'm conflicted about recommending that we support this now versus putting it off 6 months or a year, well, 6 months, I guess, would be now, to let the market come out with cars that are more fuel efficient. I think it'll happen. I think we'll see the response. So that said, I do think it's reasonable that we need to have a schedule and that it's not one time, that when you've got 15 vehicles, you've got to replace three of them a year.
Okay. Norma?
Steve had just kind of whispered over to me and asked if there was any revenue from the cars. And it looks like you're generating about $5,000 a year for the last couple of years.
Yes.
Can we add that in to that over target? Because that's not part of the request.
I didn't see it.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I didn't see it in the request.
You mean the revenue, the state share?
No, the revenue from selling your car.
Oh, from selling the car.
It looks like it's about $5,000 a year for equipment.
Equipment.
So could we add the $5,000 in for revenue to offset the cost of that car?
Mm-hmm. Times three?
No, total.
All right. Okay, I have Will, and then Mike Sigler, and then we're going to vote.
My question was sort of prompted by some things that Carol has said. Do we as a county have a policy at this point to be getting cars that are specifically low emissions, high efficiency? Is it completely up to departments? Is there sort of any overarching principle that we've talked about?
It's primarily up to the departments. The departments are keenly aware that this is a major issue at this point. You did take action last year as a body to encourage the departments to buy very fuel-efficient cars, and there's $50,000 available that will be used to supplement any purchases if someone buys a hybrid or something like that, so that the department can spec out the car that they think is most adequate for their needs, and then the legislature was adding the difference between that and a more fuel-efficient car. We did a pilot of that last year. I think we bought two or three cars that way. There's some kinks we're still working out, but in general, there's no policy from the legislature other than trying to encourage the departments to think about what cars they're purchasing.
And speaking, building on Carol's point again, within a year or two, I think we're probably going to have on the market fairly practical electrical cars. I don't know if the range for trips for I assume it'll vary a lot by department, but I'm guessing that much of it is relatively close in. Mm-hmm.
The problem is that the Chevy Bolts, which I think you're referring to, their target price right now is $40,000. So it's going to be a while before they're practical as far as being cost efficient.
But there are others that have not publicity.
All right. Mike Ziegler.
I pass.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Ready to vote? Oh, Dooley, yes.
Well, the desire to establish a policy has been there for quite a while, but it's been waiting for a recommendation from the sustainability team's green fleet subcommittee or whatever it's called.
Thanks, Dave. Okay, so that we're going to vote now. One-time funding, yes?
I'm sorry, I just have to correct that. The sustainability team was ready with a recommendation. It's just having to wind its way through committee to get to the legislature.
Okay, one-time funding in the amount of $18,940 to replace three fleet vehicles in DSS. All those in favor, please raise your hands. One, two. And oppose. Three oppose. So that's 11-4, three oppose.
Just a point of clarification. Yep. That was for $18,940, right?
Yes, $18,940. Yep. Okay, great.
It must be 10. 11-4?
11-3? 11-4-7. Yes, Frank?
I just wanted to report to you that some of us are making an effort to be exposed to alternative means of transportation. Dooley and I have exchanged vehicles. I'm driving a Toyota Prius, and she's driving my Dodge truck. So that we can experience different... I assume these are yours.
Yes, they are.
Okay.
You're not a starter.
How did they get started?
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
But we're going to loan the Prius to DSS. So they...
Okay. All right. Department. We have a motion from Dooley on Department of Social Services. These are OTRs 21 and 22.
I never said it was 41. A motion. I never said it was a motion. Since you were here, I had a couple of questions.
Right. Okay.
Because I'm looking at OTR 21, which was a laundry list of services for various programs, and the county administrator recommended less than the full amount. Mm-hmm. And I believe that you, or he, someone had indicated that you could fully cover the dispositional alternatives program within your existing budget without this money, and I just wanted to be sure that I heard that right, that that's true.
We went back to the table and looked at some of our other contracts, and I think we will make some cuts, but we will absorb that so that these programs are fully funded.
That's what I was... I just wanted to hear it from your lips. Okay. That was all. Yeah. I know it's... And that's also true for child protection. Okay, thank you very much.
Uh-huh. So no motion?
No motion. Yes, we're all right. So we're at break.
Thank you.
Until 6:05. All right? Okay, thanks.
Until what time?